Okay, so welcome to our second semester Limud of Bava Basra. Our hope is to cover quite a bit, Gadabala. We hope to cover the second Parak in Yanim and the second half of the first Parak in Yanim. So there's quite a lot. And in general, we had mentioned last time that we're going to start from the Mishnah in Zayin and Beis. But I asked you to look today at a little bit before that, Zayin and Aleph, because there's still at least one more major sugi here that is very relevant to a lot of what we talked about in the first month, and also is relevant to a lot that's coming up. So it serves as a pretty decent kind of introduction to second parak in Yanim, continuation of themes of the first parak into the second parak, even though we're not yet up to the second parak at all. We got a lot in between. But the relationship between a lot of the topics, and we've already seen that some of the issues is what to talk about, whether they are more at home in the second parak or in the first parak. So here, this is one of those topics, and it'll highlight some of the connections between the themes in both of these prakim, which we look forward to bridging over the course of this semester. So this actual sugya is not about bridges, but it's about windows. And windows, as we've already seen a little bit, have the topic of discussion of some of our previous sugyas. This comes to windows from a different direction, or from a different perspective, and may be related. So that's something we're going to have to figure out. But it's certainly coming at it from a very different perspective, right? Until now, when we spoke about windows, Reuven has windows and his neighbor is Shimon. And the concern was, is Reuven spying on Shimon? Or even, maybe he isn't, but just the possibility that he could be spying on Shimon, or that he could be intimidating Shimon with his visual access. That was the issue that we had seen with windows up until now. So here, the Gemara is introducing, and really, as you see, to get further in Makaris, hopefully a little bit more tomorrow, that Mishnayos bring it up later in the Masechta, and it's a reference to themes both in the second parak and the third parak. You'll get a chance to see. But here, we're talking about something very different about windows. Right? What's the main difference in direction here?
It's about, I guess, blocking, almost, like, restricting versus...
Right, so therefore, how is this, in a sense, the opposite?
Meaning, there it was about you kind of, or earlier on it was about you seeing into someone when they don't want it, now it's about you blocking them from being able to see out, I guess.
Right, but I'm just going to clarify, because the you's could a little get confusing there. So basically, let's stick with our friends Reuven and Shimon, just for the sake of simplicity, or some degree of clarity. So until now, Reuven's window was possibly a problem for Reuven, because maybe it's hurting Shimon, and maybe we could tell Reuven, get rid of your window. But now we're coming at the possibility that Reuven's window is a schus for Reuven, and therefore maybe now it's Shimon's problem. Until now, we were talking about Shimon being hurt by Reuven's window, and he may have some right to get rid of it. Now we're considering that maybe Reuven has the window and Shimon has to respect it. And maybe Shimon has to worry that he's not hurting the window, which is a complete reversal. Yeah, Zach?
So in a way, it's sort of like, whereas the question of windows by Hezekiah is me preventing you from using your property, this is a case of you preventing me from utilizing, you know, my own building or my own property.
Yes, except again, the you's and the me's are going to get confusing. So I could say yes, but that would be meaningless. So do you want to say it with Reuven and Shimon or some way?
So as in the Hezekiah case, Reuven's preventing Shimon from using Shimon's property.
Right.
Due to Hezekiah.
Right. And then we can prevent him. It gets very confusing. We can prevent him from doing that because of what he's preventing Shimon from doing.
Yeah.
So we can object to what he's doing.
Whereas in our case, Shimon's preventing Reuven from using his window, so he loses access to that part of his property.
Right.
And so we can prevent Shimon from causing the loss of Rubain's usage of his window.
Right. Man, that is exactly right, but just for the sake of confusion, we need to either further make our language more precise, because when you say prevent, so prevent also could mean two things. I mean that right now, by default, I'm doing something that interferes with you, so you're preventing. I'm preventing you from having peace of mind. I'm preventing you from being able to use your window. But then we mean halachically, the remedy is I can prevent you from doing that. So I don't want you to get confused with the double usage of the word prevent. So I mean that the situation is that one is causing a problem for the other. And the remedy could be sometimes that one has the right to then prevent the other from doing what he's doing or to change the situation. So here, our Gemara is going to invoke that possibility, and it's a concept which comes up more explicitly in later Mishnayos, but it's just while it's still in the order of the Dafim here, it seems like a good time to bring it up now, and again, because of its also its broader relevance. So we see, and we'll also, God willing, time permitting, we'll also get a little bit more into the details of what else is going on Daf Zayin, where you have people in shared space who are taking actions that are raising objections from their neighbors. And in some of the cases in these Gemaras, it's very extreme what a neighbor is allowed to stop the other one from doing, just because he seems to have a very seemingly minor impact on his life. And the other neighbor can say, no, I'm not going to let you do this, and I'm going to be really frustrating about it. And no matter how extreme the steps you try to take to make things work, and our Gemara gives cases where the one who wants to build a window or the one who wants to do other things is able to offer that I will rebuild your entire house in order that you shouldn't be inconvenienced by what I'm doing. Right, so the windows, for example, right now I want to build and you're worried that I'm going to block your windows and I'm going to cause you some darkening, so I will rebuild your entire house in order to move your windows to a different place where they won't be darkened. And that's one of the cases in the Gemara. It goes through a whole progression, and ultimately that's the offer on the table. I'll rebuild your entire house and I will even rent you another space to be in while this is happening, and you can still object, I don't feel like it, I don't feel like moving. So there's a lot, that's one of the common elements in some of these cases, and we'll talk a little bit about that, about how much is that a fair response, but nonetheless, that highlights this issue of not low-lighting somebody. And we see also the case here that Gemara has about the two brothers who split a property that they inherited, and one has a garden space and one has a hall. And the hall requires light, and the one with the garden builds a wall in his garden space, which closes off the light. And the brother with the hall objects, and the brother with the garden space says, I'm building on my property. And that's apparently a legitimate claim. So for him to say that he's building the wall on his property, even though it has the negative impact on the wall, on the hall, that's a legitimate point. Now, we saw during the skills hub where we spent some time on the Tosis, just to quickly recap. So what exactly is the situation going on here? So Rashi says that the situation is that you are closing off the light access to this hall. And apparently he's entitled to do that because of a lack of chazaka, which we'll talk about. So Rabbeinu Tam found that to be not tenable, because how could it be that there's a situation where it's okay for one brother to completely cut off the light source to the other brother's property? It'll make it unusable. Now, of course, here there's no glimmer yet, no pun intended, of artificial light. Whether artificial light does or does not make a difference to any of these discussions in the modern era is something we can talk about later. But for now, keep in mind that without the presence of artificial light, you know, if you're going to cut off all access to window space, so you're really making the other guy's room completely uninhabitable. You can't see at all. So could that possibly be okay? So Tosfos says, doesn't sound like it. So Tosfos quotes two other possible interpretations. One, and both of them have major implications. We'll try to get to it. One is Rabbeinu Tam says the issue is not really light. The issue is view. And that's something we definitely want to explore a little bit. How much does one have the right to object when his view is cut off? So in this particular case, the owner of the hall had a view that would have gone out through the garden. Now that view is being cut off, and that's where he's arguing against it. Ultimately a losing claim, but that's the basis of his claim. And the Re objects to that interpretation for various reasons, and the Tosfos leaves you with the Re that it's still about light, but it's a different kind of light, it's a different level of light. That the Gemara is talking about this kind of a hall. The whole nature of this place is that this asplita is that it's not a normal room. It needs a lot of light. So for a normal room, it would have been an adequate amount of light. But because of the nature of this room, so there is something which is going to be more significantly impacted. And that's what the claim is. And once again, it's a losing claim because the other brother maintains he's building in his own space. Okay, so far so good. So this is just to give a little bit of background. And what we'll see is that this issue of who can claim what. So before trying to get into the details, let me ask you in general, especially this is a fair question for Baba Basra, where we've seen that so much is contingent on Svara and Chazal's understanding of how neighborly relations should be. How do you think, from a perspective of fairness, of justice, how do you think these things should operate? Right, when we were talking about Hezek Re'iyah until now, things like that, or in the previous daf, we were talking about other kinds of actions that you could do in your house that would impact your neighbor's house, and when it's okay, when it's not okay, and we talked about the concept of Chezkas Tashmishin, was one of the last sugyas we saw before the break. Right, what does it take in order to establish the right to be able to, literally or figuratively, depending on what it is, spill over into your neighbor's property? What would you think, from a perspective of fairness and justice, how should these things be handled? The concern of light, of view, the idea that what you're doing, what you're building, is going to block my view or is going to darken my property, how do you perceive that? Yeah, Zach?
I think there's two possibilities. I think there's a possibility that's similar to Hezek Re'iyah, which is basically, you know, you make my ability to use this room or to use this window completely unavailable, and that's functionally equivalent to you spying on me because I'm going to be scared and I'm not going to be able to use my field at all. So just cutting off my ability to use this room.
Okay.
And I think perhaps there's a second way to do it, which is perhaps you have to base it off of, if I was selling a house, let's say, and the house went for $100,000, but if you build your wall and it blocks a window, maybe now the house only costs, you know, $90,000. So I just lost $1,000 out of value of my house. So maybe that could be part of it.
Okay, those are two possible models. They're not all the possible models, and I don't know if we know part of what I'm asking you, and maybe you should really want to comment on this, is what strikes you as more accurate and more, you're right, that those are two possible models. Let's just to flesh it out a little bit more before I take Shmuel's comment. So the second one is a very important point, and it's one that will impact Psak on these issues. So let's just posit for a second that if what I'm doing significantly lowers the value of your property, which is certainly possible depending on what it is. Right, so then that's already somewhat of a game changer. Right, and that's something which probably requires different calculations. But for argument's sake, let's assume it doesn't. Let's assume that, like we discussed in one of the previous sugyas, that when you're dealing with a house, so the ticket price is generally so high that smaller issues are not able to really change the selling price. So let's assume that we are not at the level where you are actually going to change the market value of the house, just to keep things relatively simple. So that being the case, so let's take that model off the table for a second, just for simplicity's sake. So we'll leave your first model, that this is somehow what I'm doing, building in my property, is impacting you. So is that comparable to Hezekiah? That's something we'll have to find out. Sounds like it could be, and part of what we want to know is it? Yeah, Shmuel?
I guess on the other hand, if I'm understanding the case correctly, the person building whatever he's doing, he himself is getting his own benefit. So for every criminal's a kula, by making him not be able to build, you're devaluing his property or his land use, which would seem to make the bar higher than like Hezekiah or something like that.
Well, so let's take that apart. So we say every chumra is a kula, so that's true in general in halacha, but here especially, we're talking about interpersonal balance. So in that case, all the more so, that for every vote for Reuben, it's a vote against Shimon. Anything that we do to support one side is probably coming off the chashmer of the other side. So there's no chumra and kula on these issues because we're trying to figure out basically how to share the space between the two, and anything that we say in favor of one comes off the other. So that's true. Why is that not true when it comes with Hezekiah? It would seem like it's true there too. Right? For the most part, that there also we have to decide. So let's put your two comments together. Let me ask you this. So in both Hezekiah and this situation with the windows, we are dealing with two neighbors who are allocating their rights between each other, and whatever we give to one is going to come off the account of the other. So that being a given, should this be comparable to Hezekiah, or is it different? What do you think? What's your feeling, buddy? You don't have to come from any sources. Just come from your sense of justice and fairness. What do you think is the right way to address these things? Your own?
I don't know for sure exactly, but I guess you could say it's more, I guess, in the Hezekiah case, it may be more like psychological, like psychologically damaging, that you're like, I guess, psyched out that this guy's looking at you or could be looking at you, versus in this case, it's more like actual, physical, tangible damage in a sense, I guess, like by him putting up the wall, you actually don't have light in that space. It's not like you think there's no light there. The light's actually obstructed now.
That's very interesting you should say that. Now, the psychological point, I think we may have mentioned before the break, that it was Rebbe Gervitz who made that point, the Rosh Yeshiva of Gateshead, the state for Rosh Yesharim, that the machlokes about whether Hezekiah Shmei Hezek or not maybe draws upon the fact that according to at least one understanding, the point that you're referencing there is that unlike other damages which really are physically demonstrable, here it's more about the psychological impact, the fact that I'm intimidated because of what you're saying. And could that be also ranked as a hezek? So that's interesting that's what you're referencing there. But what's surprising and possibly is going to end up getting questioned is that you're basically saying is that Hezekiah is less than this.
I don't know about less than or more than more, just I guess you can make a chiluk in terms of how the actual damage is occurring, I guess.
Yeah, but the chiluk is going to go in the direction of, I have more of a right to stop you from darkening my property than I have the right to stop you from spying on me. Right? It's going to come out in that direction, because you think the spying is just psychological. And here, this is more visible. So that's interesting. The details are not really going to sustain that distinction, but right. It's going to come out in the other direction, right? It's going to come out that...
Right, because I'm saying it's Bedim Kamalak, because either way, he's able... I'm saying he has a better claim, so...
Right, so just to highlight, before we take other comments, just to highlight how it's different. So when it comes to Hezekriah, right, so we know in general, after, let's say, establishing Hezekriah Shmei Hezek, right, so for the most part, the burden is on the looker. Right, so it's my right to say, don't look at me. Here, is it my right to say, don't darken my room? So maybe, maybe not, because we saw that in the case on Ardaf, the brother who's building and darkening, he had the right to say, sorry, I'm building on my own property. Now, that wasn't a good enough excuse for the guy who built a window that spies into his neighbor's property. Right? He didn't have the right to say, I'm just carving out a window on my own wall. So, apparently, there's more of a benefit to the guy who is trying to prevent someone from spying on him than there is to somebody who's trying to prevent somebody from darkening his wall, darkening his room. And also, what we'll see, it's not as evident from Ardaf, it's a little bit, but it's more when you see the other sources, is that in order to have a claim of you are darkening my room, there has to be some kind of a chazaka, or some kind of a schus that's been established for the one who wants the light. Right, for Reuven to say to Shimon, Shimon, you can't darken me. Reuven has to have some pre-established right to the light. Right, and that was what Rashi was saying over here, that in Rashi's version of why the brother who's getting darkened loses his objection, it's because he doesn't have a chazaka. Now, in terms of the other Arishonim, they don't necessarily look for a chazaka per se, but they assume that when the property was divided up, this should have been clarified as to who owns what. But the common element is that this isn't an automatic right. To whatever extent a person can say, you can't darken me, they need to have some previously established entitlement to the light. We'll talk a little bit about what kind of level that requires, but this is not an automatic right. Anyone who's going to say, you can't cut off my light, has to somehow have previously established a zchus to that light. So that's already also more than Hezekriah, right? We don't say you need to establish your zchus to your privacy. But your light, yes. Okay, Shmuel?
I think, kind of going back to what Zach's second answer, like, by Hezekriah we have, like, or it's psychological, that the damage, you can point to the damage as hurting the person. But here you're not, it doesn't seem to be hurting the person, you're hurting the house. But if you're not financially devaluing the house, how you can't, like, there's no way to establish that you're actually harming the person's property. Usually when you harm someone's property, it's like a financial loss. But if there's no financial loss, so what did you do?
Okay, so now you're going in the right direction in terms of making the Hezekriah worse than the light, worse than the darkening. But I don't know if that distinction totally works. I mean, really, it's about the impact in both cases. It's about the impact that it has on the resident. With Hezekriah, the resident is uncomfortable. And with the darkening, the resident can't see. And in both cases, the house remains physically unharmed. So it seems like there's a distinction on a different level.
Is it reducing his usage of the property?
In both cases, he might be reducing his usage, right? And as Zach pointed out, it seems like that's probably a reality. So if that's true, so is one different than the other, Al?
Maybe that's the point of Rabbeinu Tam.
Okay, yeah.
That's the criticism, because the kasha on Rashi is that, according to this reason, if he totally blocked out the light, that would be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the...
Right, because without a chazaka, you can totally block it out.
Exactly. So maybe the point of Rabbeinu Tam is that would be an actual, like, you're actually... hurting this individual, not just their property. If they can't do anything, you're blocking out all their light, so it can't be. So, but according to both Rabbeinu Tam and the Ri, it's not fully blocking out, because according to the Rabbeinu Tam, it's just not a light at all. And according to the Ri, it's like partially blocking it out. According to both, it would probably hurt the value of the property, hurt a little bit, like what they were able to do before, but it's not actually hurting the individual to not be able to look out or to have a room that's not as nice anymore.
Which is why he loses in both cases. He loses because his claim that it's not as nice is not a it's not a winning card.
But as a gliya, where it actually, like Sam was saying, where it actually is hurting the individual, not just their property.
But if it was totally, that's what they don't like by Rashi, that if it was totally pitch black in there, then they would have more of an objection. Could be. But what else? What else distinguishes the two? Something else that no one has picked up on yet. Right, is there another difference between what happens when I'm spying on you and what happens when I am building in a way that darkens your property, your own?
Yeah, I think we may have hit on this to begin with, but when you open a window, you're spying in, you're increasing your, I guess, visual into the other guy, into Shimon's property. When you put up a wall, you're decreasing it. So it's almost like you're lessening any possible hezekria in this case.
Yeah, you definitely, from a hezekria perspective, you are, for sure. But this is focused on a different aspect, even if it may be connected to the chazaka for hezekria. Does he?
With hezekria, it's not guaranteed.
Okay, it's true. And yet... that also pushes us in the wrong direction. It's true that there would be a distinction, but then that should mean I should have more of a right to object to the darkening than the hezekria. Shmuel?
I think hezekria, maybe it's coming more from you directly.
Okay, yeah.
Your looking is primarily or the problem, or here it's your action. It's separate from you. It's what you did, but it's not like it's that at that point in time, that's what might be harming you. But by hezekria, it's like what you will do and what you are doing, as opposed to the prior event or whatever.
You're saying it's more like a grumma?
Yeah.
Interesting. It's still not yet fully there, but it's interesting. That's what to think about, Max.
I'm not sure why this would necessarily allow for him to be ma'akev, but by his agria, it's not necessarily happening. But by the wall, it's definitely happening.
And that's similar to what Yossi said, right? But then the question is again, so how come I have, it's pushed us in the wrong direction, so then why do I have more of an ability to object to your hezekria than to your darkening? So what about the following distinction? Right, when I object to your hezekria, I object to the fact that you are hurting me. Right? You and your spying eyes, is that the expression, your lying eyes? You are spying on me and you're hurting me. Your presence is causing me a problem. When I object to your building a wall, so what's happening there? Are you hurting me? What I'm really saying is the light that's on your property, or the air that's on your property, I want it. I'm entitled to your air. I'm entitled to your sunlight. And you are holding back from me the usage of your sunlight. So do you see that difference? That with hezekria, I'm saying, listen, I don't want anything to do with you. And you're spying on me, and I don't like that. So maybe I have the right to say that. But here, I'm saying that I do want you. I want your property and it's sunlight. And you're taking it away from me. Yes, sir?
I'm not sure how much I agree with that, because some of that air and some of that light, or the air and light, even though maybe it passes through your property, it also is part of my property. The light comes into my property, the air comes into my property. So do I not at least have partial ownership in it?
I mean, it comes because it goes through your property, right? So now, you're not wrong necessarily, but just to highlight, the no pun intended, the difference, right? That it comes there because I need your property to be a passageway for it.
So if I said I'll build like a mirror to move the light around your property.
Maybe, but the point is, do you even have to do that? Why do you even have to answer to this?
That would also be akin to him actually just moving the wall. Seemingly, it's him making any compensate any.
We could talk about how you could maybe help, but how you could maybe mitigate it. But why is that your problem? It's a chiddush to say it's your problem. Say, I'm entitled to the airspace on your property, and you, by building a wall, are taking away something I'm entitled to. Who said I'm entitled to? And so when the brother says, I'm building on my property, he says, yeah, it's my property, it's my airspace, and I happen to decide I want a wall around my airspace. It has the impact on you that now you can't see, or especially in light of the other interpretations of Tosfos, has the impact on you that it's not the grand hall that you thought. I'm sorry, but I mean, it's my space. Why can't I build on my space? So it might go first.
I just wanted to more clearly ask, and I think Rebbe said it, like, why would that necessarily mean that claim can be rejected versus the other one? Like,
because when you're spying on me, all right, so I can say it's not fair. I have the right not to be spied on by you. You're doing something to me, so don't stop doing it. Here, what I'm saying is, you're not doing anything to me, but I want something of yours, and you're holding it back from me. So why do I have the right to say that I want your airspace? It's your airspace, and now why are you allowed to kind of? So it was Zach then, Yossi?
So, like, it's not clear to me how this case of a wall would be any different from, let's say, I had a big oven in my property, and it made a bunch of dust and smoke and blocked out the light and made the air like not nice to breathe. Mm-hmm. Like, because functionally that's the same issue. It's while the light and the air is in my property, I can do whatever I want with it. I can block it out as much as I want. I can pollute the air as much as I want.
So is that true? So now this is a part of why I like the sugya so much for now. Because this is actually going to provide somewhat of an introduction to some second parakinyanim, because we do have to figure out where the lines are in these issues, and this is helpful for that. But what do you think about what Zach just said? Is that similar? You're on your own, Jesse?
Not, because then you're way more like directly damaging versus, I think in this case, you're really just, there was, like, I guess, a benefit. It's almost like Nana, in a sense, like, you were benefiting. Mm-hmm. But again, it makes sense according to Rashi, who said you had a chazak on it. And so I'm kind of just removing that from you, but I'm not, I'm not damaging you. It's just going, it's just you had an added benefit, but I'm coming along and saying, like, all right, I'm doing something. But if you're
I'm not damaging you.
But if my air is, polluted because of what you're doing, then you are.
Don't we have the case of the smoke house or something?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. These are going to be cases in the second parak, which drawing the distinction between them is going to be valuable. So that's why this is a good issue to raise. No pun intended. But I'll see how many puns we can not intend. But this distinction is going to be important. Right? But you see, like Yaron is saying, what the distinction is. Right? If you could somehow only pollute your own air, right? So then you'd have a good point. Because I could say, oh, I like looking at your clean air, and now it's polluted. So then maybe that isn't my business. But if you're polluting my air, right, so then you have done something to throw a negative force out there. I could object to that. And that's going to be what a lot of these second parak issues are about. But here, you're not doing anything to make the air, my air, bad. It's that I want to benefit from your air. Right? My air would get better because it's got air coming through yours.
You're making my property bad. You're making my property
you're
dark.
Stopping
and
my property from being... But my property is dark because it can't benefit from your property.
But it's not enjoyable. Like, who wants to sit in a dark, unlit house
all
day?
It is bad, right? But the question is, I'm saying that I should be able to have light because I want to take your light. You're saying, I'm sorry, it's my light. It's in my airspace, and I'm building on my own airspace. And now, just to clarify, what we'll see also is that presumably there's a difference between different levels here. Right? Is it really conceivable, like Tosus is raising, that we're going to be allowing a situation where without a chazaka you could actually completely darken somebody else's property and make it unusable? Or is that not even a realistic possibility? We're only talking about situations where it's a question of degree or certain special need rooms where there should be a greater degree of light, but that maybe there's no real situation here where you're actually allowed through your proximity to make it impossible to function in somebody's house. So that's itself going to be a question. So maybe in all scenarios there's got to be at least a basic functionality. But at what point do I have the right to say I thought I got more? Right, especially according to Rabbeinu Tam's formulation, where I didn't just want light, I wanted a line of sight, I wanted a view. So this is also part of what I wanted to ask you about, you know, what's just here, right? And is it just whoever gets there first is entitled to keep things that way forever? There's an interesting column by Thomas Sowell, you know who he is, mm-hmm. The economist, right? So from Stanford, so I could actually send this around afterwards. So he talked about the tendency of people to expect that whatever benefit they have on their property that comes from its relationship with outside factors to remain. So let's say, for example, if I brought a property that's on a mountain, let's say, and there's no other houses around me, so I have a good view of the world. So let's say somebody's going to build a skyscraper next to me. I'm no longer going to have that view. To what extent am I entitled to stop him? Now, municipalities sometimes make laws to that effect. But here it goes back to my previous question. What is just here? Now, should I have that? What do you think? If I have a house with a nice view, and now you buy the property next to me and you want to build a skyscraper and block my view, should I have the right to object? Okay, why do you think I should have the right to object? Why should I have the right to object?
Because it makes my life worse.
So? You know, gotta share the world. Right, so, do I have the right to always have my life stay as good as it is?
Like, I'm thinking, for instance, there was a suit between Eish HaTorah and some people lived in the Old City, because when they built up the Eish HaTorah Center in the Old City, they blocked off some apartments that the owners were making a ton of money renting out, because, you know, Jesus Kotel, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, it's again, bringing money into it is going to make it more complicated, but it's, you know, this is part of my life. I had an expectation of certain things to go on, and I'm allowed to continue with my expectation.
So that's exactly the point he addresses there. So what do you think is just? Are you allowed to continue the expectation? Should you only want to address that?
I think no. Like, I think it's okay for the person to build.
Okay.
Unless like, it might not be, like, nice or whatever, like, to do it, but unless something's tangible, whether monetarily or you could point to, like, the room doesn't work anymore or something like that, like, it just, it's beauty and stuff like that. It's not a quantifiable thing that we can, I don't think we could enforce.
Well,
that, like, now Like, it happens to be that generally if you build, if you cut off someone's view to, like, the ocean, like, you're going to lower the price. So I don't know how, like, practical, like, the difference is. But just, like, theoretically or whatever, if there was no monetary, like, why are we, it seems like, not arbitrary, but just something that, like, halacha or law shouldn't, like, halacha wouldn't account for, because it's not quantifiable.
Well, two points before going further. First of all, I'm not sure if we can totally accept that, because we do see that, especially with items that you're purchasing, these things do impact. You know, so to say that it's not quantifiable, and people pay more for things that have such aspects to it, so I wouldn't necessarily dismiss that. But also, like I said, at the same time, do want to maintain that caveat that we'll see that if you are actually inflicting a major monetary loss on somebody's property values, that might be grounds for a different kind of conclusion. But let's just say, let's leave that out for a second. Let's say, so I bought a house, and when I bought the house had a beautiful view of the beach. And now you want to build in between, and I'm not going to have a view of the beach. And I say to you, I had this view of the beach. I won't always have this view of the beach. Can I stop you? Should I morally? I mean, just what do you think is just and right? Should I be able to stop you? Yeah?
That's. I think what I was trying to say was that if there is no financial accounting, then there's no way to quantify that it's being harmful. And so you might not be, it might be uncomfortable and like rude or whatever, but like in terms of what should, where should the courts get involved? It doesn't seem like it's something that...
I bought this house because it had a nice view of the beach, and now I don't have it anymore.
Okay. Like, that's unfortunate, but why? That doesn't seem to be strong enough to make someone not be able to build a home.
Okay.
That just seems to be part of the law, but the point of their bonds is it goes beyond that to what's just.
Okay, but is it... So what
so
do you think
what's
is just?
What's just discussing seems to just be straight law.
Maybe.
I don't know.
So then tell me what you think is just. That's part of the question. So what do you think is just here?
I don't know what, but it goes beyond that law.
Okay, but what is just? Like, you know, who's right here? Does... So Reuven, who lived there before and liked the view of the beach, Shimon wants to build. Where is justice here? All right, so we had three hands up, so we'll go start from the back. Al?
If we really took this into account, then everybody would own, essentially, be entitled to these lines of sights, these long stretches of airspace. It would completely limit everybody's ability to build and be these all, people would have these overlapping airspaces that they're entitled to. Nobody could build anything. It's just completely unrealistic.
It is completely realistic. YU owns the airspace above Gluck, another building.
Straight above. That's very different. I completely agree with you. I think you do own the airspace directly above you. Not all around you, your view of that and that and that.
So you're onto something there also. The question is is realism the issue, or is justice and morality the issue? Or are they both the issue? Maybe they are both the issue. Because certainly if something is not practically feasible, it gets a little bit... for example, when we talked about... So that was an element that there's just certain benefits that are just not able to be quantified and made into actual merchandise. Just for reasons of practicality, maybe that's a factor here also. Your own?
Maybe it also has to do with like location. By a beach, if people are buying houses by a beach, or let's say in Yerushalayim, people want to see Harabayas or whatever that is, there's certain locations where people are dafka buying it or purchasing something there for the view, as in the view is like a big part of why you're buying it, versus somewhere else, like, okay, if you just have a random lake next to your house and someone comes and builds something next to it, okay, so now you don't have the view of the lake. But if you bought a house with, you know, and spent extra money for that apartment or that house because of the view that it has, maybe that would play a big factor, versus like...
Okay, well, where we'll credit that is, you know, we did say that when it does actually impact the purchase price, that may affect the bottom line here. So, to fit that in with what you're saying, let's say the kind of thing that would be advertised in the real estate flyer, you know, maybe that is something to pay more attention to. Well, the kind of thing that wouldn't make it to the flyer, you would just notice, oh, I like this house. I see I can see down the hill from here. And maybe that's on a different level. but because it plugs into that issue of a value, perhaps. Because it was up first, Shmuel.
What was brought up is talking about justice outside of the legal thing. I think that gets there's into a whole spider. There's so many different values and things, like different things that are affected by this. One guy's line of sight is more extra legal is more important than 80 homes. If you're talking about an apartment, like it just seems we're not once we go above what the letter of the law is. We just there's too many what factors that affect everyone else. Why would we elevate this one guy above everyone else?
Right. And then you get into public policy issues. Right. You're basically saying that it's not in the interest of society to let this guy have a right which is going to prevent development on such
make it one-on-one. So
maybe. But just to say what Thomas Sowell's point is before we get a certain amount done today, you may end up looking at the Rashba on your own at this point, but we'll have to pick it up for tomorrow. But essentially, the point Thomas Sowell makes, and that probably plugs into the justice here also, says, economically, so we price things differently when something is a possibility and when something is guaranteed. So if you buy a lottery ticket, the lottery ticket is only a small fraction, very small fraction, of the value that you hope that you would get from it, because the chances that you will get that value are so slim. So therefore, you pay a small price. You pay a small price because maybe it will be very beneficial to you, but you're not guaranteed that, so you pay the smaller price. If you want a guarantee of something, so then you pay a much higher price. So somebody who buys a house that has a nice view right now, it's not obstructed by anything. So if he wants the guarantee that it will always be like that, so then he should be obligated to pay to buy all the surrounding properties, so that which is what some ultra-rich people actually do, right, to make sure that it will stay that way forever. When he does not do that, so there's a chance it will stay like that forever, or there's a chance it will stay like that for a significant period of time, and there's a chance that it won't stay like that, and there's a chance it'll stay like that for some time, but not for too long. So all of that is reflected in the purchase price. Right? The purchase price is calibrated to that. It's calibrated to the fact that it has this view right now, but no one knows what will happen in the future. So that's the way society should be set up, so he argues from his economic perspective. So he was arguing that he thinks that when judges favor the original owners, or when states, when municipalities make laws saying that no one can build now to block these things, I mean, the municipalities may have larger reasons why they want to do it. They may feel like it preserves a character to their neighborhood that they want to preserve, and that might be in their interest. But his basic point is that he thinks that that's on some level unjust, because if you really want, essentially what he's arguing, and I can send you around the essay, you could read it, but if you had I think his point basically is, if you have a town, let's say, where people buy their houses and the neighborhood looks a certain way, and then the town council gets together and makes rules saying that nobody can build in a way that interferes with that, that's really basically gaming the system. That if they want to guarantee what their environment looks like, you should really be obligated to personally buy all the space around you, and then you can control it. But the purchase price of just your house is not set to give you ownership of everything around you. It's set to give you ownership of what this house is right now, and you have no guarantee that other people and their property is not going to do something that's going to change that. And when let's say if a town council is going to put some rule into place to stop that from happening, they're basically kind of gaming the system, because they're telling the residents they don't have to spend that greater price to control their whole environment, will kind of artificially control the environment for you. Maybe that's not really just. Maybe we should, in a pure justice sense, let everyone do what they want to do with their own property. And if you want to prevent that, you should be obligated to invest as much as it takes to control all that property. Now, you could argue on that, but that's his perspective as far as what is just from an economic perspective. And it comes down to the point that prices reflect the difference between a guarantee and an opportunity. And that essentially what you're paying for when you only buy your own property is the opportunity that it will stay the way it is as it is right now. But that's not a guarantee. And if you want a guarantee, you should have to pay much more for that. So if you buy a lottery ticket, you pay a small price because you have no guarantee that it's actually going to pay off. So too, your house costs what it is because of what it is now, and not because you have any guarantee that it'll always be that way. So, essentially, what that would seem to reflect is that your neighbor essentially should have the right to do in his property what he wants to. If you are counting on that space remaining in your benefit, so then you should have to own the space. And so on my flight to Israel, I had nobody sitting next to me. It was very helpful to have nobody sitting next to me to put my sarm on and the like when I wanted to get up and wanted to eat. But I had no guarantee of that. If I wanted a guarantee of that, I'd have to have a more expensive seat. On the way back, I did not have any space next to me. That's the way it is. But so when you get on a plane and you see there's nobody next to you and you put your stuff down and you're very happy, and then just before takeoff, somebody comes in huffing and puffing and sits there. So you don't have the schuss to say to them, oh, but I was so happy that I didn't have anybody next to me, because that's not something that you're guaranteed. So if I want your light, and the light's passing through the space that you own, so it would seem that I need to have some prior claim to that. I need to have either purchased it from you with some kind of a deal, or specifically on our daf where we talk about brothers who split an inheritance. Right, so that should be factored in. Right, that's what's happening on our Gemara. The Gemara discusses that. Right, so that if we had a property that was half garden and half hall, so there's a difference in value between those two types of land. So presumably, since the brothers had the right to split it 50-50, so they calculated, okay, it's not going to come down to how many meters, how many square feet each one is, because there's very different usages for these two kinds of properties. So we'd have to hire assessors and advocates or surveyors or whatever to figure out how to make this land 50-50. That maybe my part is much wider than yours because it has less valuable per foot kind of usage, and yours is more compact because it has more value. So that's got to be factored in. So what the Gemara is saying is, if I want to also claim that you can't do anything on your property that's going to make my property dark, so then I also have to work that out with you. That's got to be a part of the division, that we have to say, okay, when we split it 50-50, we're also factoring in air rights, airspace rights, in order for that to work. So here, I guess you'll see tomorrow when I look in the source inside, but the Rashba maintains that as a general rule, nobody has the right to anybody else's property usage unless there is some kind of a kinyan. And the cases in the second parak or Hezekiah, those are when your property is impacting negatively on my property. So then I have the right to say, I'm here and you can't hurt me with what you're doing. but that I have an entitlement to the space because I want your sunlight, I want your air. So that should only exist when there is some kind of an agreement. So to give a little bit of a preview of what we'll see tomorrow, so we'll have to figure out when that's true and when it isn't true. When is that something that is required? When is that something that's not? Also, what are the exceptions to that policy? And also, what's going to be a significant machlokas in the Rishonim is, so what does it take in order to establish that right? Does it require an actual kinyan? Is mechila enough? We talked about cheskas tashmishin, that there was a pretty significant machlokas in the Rishonim as to what it takes for me to establish the right to spill over into your property or to have my beams supported by your property. So is that what we're talking about? Like Rashi suggested here, do you need a 3-year chazakah in order to be entitled to your light? Or is mechila enough? And as we'll see, this is also going to impact when you do have a justified claim that I'm darkening your property. How do we characterize that? Is that some kind of a nezek somehow? Or is that some type of a gezel, stealing something from you? And how far do we go? Literally, how far away do I have to go in order not to darken your property? Do I have to go as far as it takes so that there's absolutely no impact whatsoever? So all of these are some of the major issues yet to come as we explore the technology of Windows. So God willing, tomorrow, hopefully we'll have a little more of the sources under our belt and we'll see where this goes. But for the immediate future, what stands in front of us is Mincha. So.